Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues that confront, intersect, and often interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. The Students for a Democratic Society is a student organization that takes its name from the original SDS of 1960 to 1969. It was the largest radical student organization in the history of the United States. A new incarnate was founded by 2010, and they had over 150 chapters over the United States. The contemporary SDS purpose is to promote active participation of young people in the formation of a movement to build a society free from poverty, ignorance, war, exploitation, racism, and sexism. I welcome students, and I want to say thank you so very much. I appreciate you coming and participating today on 411 Teen. I welcome Catherine Draken. Catherine is a senior, majoring in psychology, interest or activism, and politics.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you again. Johns Palmer, student at FSU, sophomore, Russian and Spanish, major, linguistics and board games, interest.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming. Maddie Hendrick, FSU, senior, Spanish, major, interest, trivia, and music.
Thank you for having me.
And Isabella Casanova, FSU, freshman, political science, is major and interest are music, literature, and politics.
Thank you. This is an awesome experience. Yeah.
Well, I, again, sincerely appreciate you all coming. On this edition of 411 Teen, I'd like to just kind of talk about what's happening, get you to bring us up to date with where things are. Usually, I have you all in at least once a year, and I could think you were in, about a year ago, just to kind of keep us up to date with what's happening. There's so much that's going on. There's DACA, and there's gun safety and gun control, and that's a whole panel on President Thrasher's naming and recognitions, and we can go on and on and on. But that's what I want to do, is just at least have you bring us up to date with what is happening. I think the first thing I guess I'll start on, which is pretty in the forefront, is just gun safety and gun control. You know, another deadly mass shooting in a school occurred in Parkland, Florida. 17 high school students were killed by a former student at the Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. Two busloads of students arrived in Tallahassee to protest gun control laws and legislation. When you think about what's happening, what's your position on gun control or gun safety, whichever you want to say? Sometimes I say gun safety, and then I get corrected, and they say gun control. So whichever one it is, I know it's one of the most divisive issues in the U.S. today. And, you know, I'll just start here and go around the table.
Well, I think, obviously, gun control is definitely one of the most divisive issues we have today. I think that when we have situations where people tell us that we need to stop, we need to take a moment to grieve, and we need to not talk about this soon after the event, I personally disagree with that, because I think it's just something that Republicans and the NRA want us to do, so we don't talk about these issues, and we don't talk about the legislation that needs to be passed. I think the numbers don't lie, considering the fact that the United States is one of the highest in mass shootings in the world, and so much higher. I believe it's more than the other top five countries with mass shootings. The fact is, do I need to wait for that?
Keep on.
The fact is that it's been decades, frankly. Decades of seeing these mass shootings happen over and over again without any real response to end these tragedies from our government. And I think that really all we've seen, aside from a few other cases, is just politicians that are not willing to enact certain changes, and I'm not happy with that anymore. If we want to see people stop dying, then we need to stop giving these guns out for as much as we would any other product. They're not just a product. They're a tool, and they're something that needs to be given to people who deserve them and not just to people who want them. Mm-hmm. If you feel like you need to buy a gun, then you need to know that you can't have any malicious intent to use it, and I have no problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think, you know, as John's mentioned, this has become normalized in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm only 18 years old. I'm about to turn 19. And it's become something that's a normal part of my everyday life. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never lived in a United States where this wasn't the norm. And to me, that's terrifying to think that every day I should, you know, scroll through Twitter or watch the news and expect to see something like this. And that when I do see something like this, I'm not surprised anymore.
Right.
And that should be, you know, terrifying to all of us.
Do you think that, and this is to all of you, that we have become desensitized to it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
You know, recently there's been, you know, Columbine, there's been Sandy Hook, and there are people out there who even say that, you know, these events were made up for publicity reasons, which is absurd to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it came to the point where me, my parents, my siblings, you know, the people I consider close to me, this had become normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason that the Parkland shooting is so important to me specifically is because, you know, we're all Floridian residents.
Uh-huh.
And that Parkland is an hour from my house where I grew up my entire life. And, you know, my siblings the very next day, their schools that they attend every day received threats like that. And to think that this has become the reality that we live in is terrifying to me. You know, I live in Tallahassee now. I'm from Miami. I can't do anything if something were to happen. And, you know, I believe that, you know, people say that we have our constitutional right. They have Second Amendment right to own a gun and bear arms. And I understand that, and I don't mean to infringe upon that.
Mm-hmm.
But weapons like the ones that this shooter used are not meant for self-defense. They are weapons of mass murder. And it terrifies me to even think that my little brother, in 12 years old, could go to school
and not come back
on the bus home.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You know, my parents have a rifle in their house. I know people who have guns, and that's okay. You know, but it's not okay where to the point where someone who is known to be a danger to the people around him is able to acquire a weapon of mass murder. That to me is, you know, we need to change that immediately.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about it.
And just to add to that, one thing I want to point out is I started working at Strozer at the library on campus recently. And ever since I started working there, I think the night before I actually started my first shift, I was trying to find some reference videos for, like, my training. And all I found was videos of the shooting that occurred in 2013. So working there and knowing that, like, this is a place where we've had these events, it hits very close to home for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made me realize that my right to live and work as a student, it trumps the right of other people to, it trumps the Second Amendment, in my opinion. My inalienable right to live trumps the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. Catherine, where do you sit?
So, gun control is, like, definitely on everybody's mind, and I feel like that's a good thing. I definitely think that people need to be talking about this, not just thoughts and prayers, but we need political action because this can't be allowed to continue. And aside from the gun control, which I support, I don't think anyone should be able to stockpile mass murder weapons to kill innocent people. But America seems to be a culture of violence, starting from the genocide of the Native Americans and slavery and continuing onward today with police militarization, mass surveillance, and the mass shootings that we seem to experience almost like just on a regular basis now, and it's become normal. And I think it's our responsibility as young people, as progressives, to fight back against this culture of violence, to stop normalizing this this kind of behaviors and ideologies. And it seems that, for example, the Parkland shooter was a known white supremacist. He talked, like, months before the shooting, he talked about killing black people, Mexicans, gay people. He was obsessed with guns. He showed violent behavior. And these things usually go hand in hand, these beliefs of superiority, white supremacy, male chauvinism, and violence go hand in hand. And you see this represented in hate crimes and domestic violence. And these kinds of things are, they're normalized in American society, which is at its core incredibly violent. And in addition to making sure that people don't have access to weapons of mass murder, I think we need to challenge the culture of violence that causes people who are allowed access to guns to even commit these atrocities in the first place. I also want to mention that the organization that the shooter was involved with...
Allegedly,
is the Republic of Florida, which is centered in Tallahassee. And we know, because we have heard from people who used to be involved with those people, talking about their experiences online, that they have a stockpile of weapons. And this is a group that is overtly white supremacist, who preaches the segregation of Florida to create some sort of white ethno-state or something. And this is the type of ideology that encourages this mass violence against mostly oppressed people, but it can take many different forms. And the violence that pervades American society goes very deep, and we need to challenge that. Well, in any way we can.
We know violence is as American as apple pie, as they say. I mean, it is. I mean, that's how America started. That's our history. You tuned into 411 Teen, and we are honored this hour to have Students for a Democratic Society joining us. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. This hour, I have some students from Florida State University. They are all members of the Students for a Democratic Society. Again, I'd like to welcome Catherine Draken, Johns Palmer, Maddie Hendrick, and Isabella Casanova. I didn't get to hear your comments. We had to take a break, but you're in the seat.
All right. So, I mean, I don't think it even... you know, needs to be restated that everything that everyone just said about how horrible this was and it should never happen, and of course we need gun control. But an interesting thing I'd like to point out, you briefly mentioned this about the students who came up here earlier today to have this protest, this rally against this gun violence, and that's exactly the sort of thing that SDS stands for. We want to see people of their own accord getting together and fighting for what they believe in. And that was, you know, kind of the most, you know, biggest representation of our values, which was, you know, these people deciding that they're not going to take it anymore. And, you know, this horrible thing happened to them. And, you know, instead of, you know, just sitting around and crying about it forever, they decided to get up and change it. And they came here to the Capitol, and they had a rally and a protest, and they're trying to get legislation passed, and that is incredible.
That's incredible.
It's something being done by children as well. Like, we have to remember. I mean, we
have children.
Yeah, we have adults in our legislature who could be doing these things, but instead choose to fall within the pockets of lobbyists.
And well, they say it's not to interrupt you, but you know, they say it's not the gun, it's the individual. You know, that's the response to this. Why are we looking at the guns? Well, you know, haven't you heard that? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the gun. The gun is not the problem. It's the individual. Again, access is not the problem, because if you think about it, all of these mass murderers, they have acquired their guns legally, mm-hmm. you know, legally. So I don't know, and these are just, you know, rhetorical questions I'm throwing out there, but will stricter gun control laws address the problem? How do we address the problem? What do you all think?
I think stricter laws will partially address the problem.
Okay.
For example, the Parkland shooter, he showed violent tendencies and signs of wanting to hurt people well before the shooting,
mm-hmm.
and he should not have been allowed to legally obtain a gun.
That's true.
So having stricter gun control laws is a definite starting point for preventing these types of tragedies from happening.
What does it say if you can buy a gun of that caliber at 18 years of old, age, and you can't even buy alcohol? You know, I'm not that they're the same, but you know, I mean, to me, it's like, wait a minute now. You can buy a gun and go out and kill everyone up, but you can't get cigarettes or you can't get...
You also have to consider, you know, this person, he was suspended from school.
Right.
He was not allowed to even carry a book bag. You know, to quote one of my friends, he's not allowed to carry school supplies, but somehow he's able to attain an AR-15. Mm-hmm. So how does it make any sort of sense to say that it's not guns that kill people, it's people that kill people?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't go in there with his bare fists and beat 17 kids to death. He shot them to death.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just
mm-hmm.
the reality of it. If you look at the numbers, you know, countries with stricter gun control laws, if you combine their statistics for numbers of death in 2017, the top 10 countries added together do not even come near the same amount that occurred in the USA. It's just not acceptable.
Okay, yeah. Well, I guess, you know, the issue is, you know, where do we go from here, you know? And also, something we haven't talked about, because I know we have tons of things to discuss, but what about the role and the responsibility of the NRA?
Well, I mean,
is there a role? I mean, I'm not saying, what
course,
is it?
Of course there's a role. Well, and you have to look at the history of the NRA as an organization. You know, this is an organization that you just started out as, you know, a bunch of guys who liked shooting guns. It was a gun safety club
right.
and an
yeah,
interest club for people who like to have guns. And then in the 90s, man named Wayne LaPierre took control of the NRA and immediately started using it to pump tons of money into the government in order to get these sorts of gun laws passed. And if you look at the ways that the NRA is relating to gun control, you'll see that they'll flip-flop all the time, because whenever, you know, it looks like, you know, like black people would be able to get lots of guns, you know, they'll say, oh, we want stricter gun controls because we don't want criminals to, you know, have guns. And then, you know, but, you know, if it's a white person, they're like, oh, it's not the gun's fault. Like, you know, and they're, you know, all the sorts of these lobbying groups, these millionaires and billionaires, you know, are a big problem in our society, because basically all of the politicians are bought out to these millionaires and billionaires one way or another.
And it's about money.
Yeah.
I mean, the bottom line, and I'll get right to you. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is, you're right. It really is about money, and money talks. And the NRA has tons of money. Okay? Go on,
John. I just wanted to add to Maddie's point that this is something that we've seen in the history of our country since the beginning of the war on drugs. Is this blatantly racist use of code words to refer to people of color. I just want to make this point absolutely mm-hmm. clear. When the NRA is talking about responsible gun owners, they're talking about white men. They're not talking about anybody else. But when they talk about black people with a gun, they use the word criminal.
Criminal. Uh-huh.
And it's that code switching, not code switching, it's that code word, those mm-hmm. code words that we've seen since the Nixon era that are not only used in the war on drugs, but they're used on when we talk about gun control as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like we can't talk about violence in America or guns without talking about white supremacy, racism, and even toxic masculinity.
Absolutely.
Considering
because they're all inextricably bound.
Of course.
Yeah, the fact that the almost all mass shootings are committed by men.
Mm-hmm.
And these concepts of whiteness and maleness and American violence are intricately linked, and you can't talk about one without talking about the others.
Raise some good points. Do you have a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up the fact that, you know, if we look at the history, just even in my recent memory mm-hmm. of, you know, mass shootings and the people who commit them, you know, the majority of them are young white men who have, you know, superiority complexes, whether it be, you know, male superiority or white superiority mm-hmm. or whichever one it is. And again, I just want to bring up the fact that, you know, our politicians have become chess pieces for these corporations to use, you know, and I think that's part of what our group advocates. We are students for a democratic society. Mm-hmm. You know, the people have overwhelmingly shown, at least in recent surveys, that, you know, gun control is necessary. And, you know, just yesterday they held a vote in the Capitol
yes.
about whether or not they want to block access to, you know, weapons like AR-15
uh-huh.
and magazines and stuff. And, you know, that was an overwhelming no.
Yeah. 70% of folks.
Exactly.
Were,
yeah. mm-hmm. However many, and they released a list of who voted yes and who voted no, and it was an overwhelming no. And it just shows how, you know, again, these politicians are just playing pieces for these corporations, and it's not right. And it also doesn't help that the fact that most of these, you know, white male shooters are portrayed as, you know, lone wolves, or they're portrayed as misunderstood, or, you know, he was adopted, or, you know, his family didn't love him, or you think there aren't plenty of other people who are going through the same thing.
Right.
You know, you can't say, oh, he didn't have a father figure who could help him. But then in, you know, minority communities, mm-hmm. when you lock up half of their fathers, then, oh, it's not because they don't have
the
father
fathers,
figures.
No.
It's because they're criminals or they're hoodlums.
Or their father's abandoned
or,
on purpose.
Right. Or they're immigrants
right.
or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it becomes that, you know, the people of color are made out when they commit crimes to be, you know, absolutely terrible people. They're evil mm-hmm. versus, you know, white supremacists, oh, they have a lot of feelings. They're misunderstood. And that's something
chaos
that's...
chaos in their lives.
Mm-hmm, and that's something that's inherent in our society, and we need to, you know, address that, because if it's not addressed, it's never going to change.
Right.
And in particular, I would like to add to that that a lot of the discourse around mass shootings usually involves mental illness, and
mm-hmm.
people try to say that the shooter committed these atrocities because they had a mental illness. And I'm mentally ill. Most of my friends are mentally ill. And being mentally ill does not cause somebody
right.
to commit mass murder.
Yeah, the mental
right.
illness is racism. And yeah.
Well, you all raised some really very valid points. And they're points that are always skirted, okay, you know, in society overall. So it'll be interesting to see how this evolves and the impact that the students have on legislation and gun control and gun safety. Are there any other comments on this? Maddie, did you have something you want to share?
I mean, just to, you know, to bring back the mental illness thing, I also have mental illnesses, and, you know, I've looked at the numbers, I've looked at the statistics, and people with mental illness statistically commit less violent crimes
right.
at a lower rate of violent crimes than people without mental illness.
And are more likely to be victims of violent
mm-hmm.
crimes than the perpetrators.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so basically, you know, making this rhetoric about mental illness, it's really, you know, just changing the blame to put on the victim, saying
right.
that, you know, the people who are the most discriminated in our society,
mm-hmm.
you know, should take the blame for this. That's
right.
ridiculous.
Right. And because somebody is depressed or going through some, you know, whatever the change may be, does that mean that that is going to push them to go out and commit mass, you know, murder? No. Okay. Francis Epps. Francis Epps, the declared founder of Florida State University, was a wealthy slave owner and grandson of Thomas Jefferson. He was a founding member of St. John's Episcopal Church. In 1995, President D'Alembert of FSU established the Jefferson Epps Trophy to honor Epps and his grandfather, Thomas Jefferson. A statue was installed to commemorate him on FSU's campus. In October of 2016, the statue was the subject of a removal referendum introduced by the Students for a Democratic Society because Epps was a slave owner. In addition, B.K. Roberts was a Florida Supreme Court justice who worked vehemently to deny Virgil Hawkins admission to the segregated University of Florida Law School, even though the United States Supreme Court ordered the school to desegregate. How important is it that we know our history?
I think it's incredibly important that we know our history. Without knowing the past and the struggles that happened before us, how can we possibly know how to struggle in the mm-hmm. present and how we got to be where we are today?
Okay. Any other comments?
You know, and that's the thing that people always get wrong about our position. Everyone says that we're trying to erase history, forget about it. We're going to take away these statues, and you know, we're not going to be able to remember that these horrible things happened. No, like, here's the thing: if you know, I would love for you take down this Epps statue, and you move him across the block, you put him in a museum, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You put him in a museum, and it says, you know, Francis Epps was a slave owner. Because you look at that statue on FSU campus right now, it doesn't say anything about him having owned slaves. It doesn't say anything about him having bought Confederate war bonds and supporting the Confederate Army. You know, you look at FSU's website, and you find the page about Francis Epps, and it doesn't mention any of these things. So, mm-hmm. you know, we actually are saying that we want history to be known. We think that it's this lost cause narrative. It's this narrative that, you know, the South was just fighting for their rights, and it had nothing to do with slavery or racism or anything. And that's the erasure of history. That's what these sorts of statues represent,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we're fighting against.
Well, yeah, I have to put on a different hat. Those sitting on the other side would say, but that's what was happening at that time. And therefore, we need that. Wouldn't you know? Let me finish. Don't jump down my throat. And therefore, we need to recognize what was happening. Slavery was in. It was in to be a slave owner. That's where things were at. And hey, lucky for him, he was able to be a slave owner. So why should we deny what happened way back then, okay, and, you know, erase it? Because that's what you're doing. I mean, I've heard that and I know you have too, but I've heard it so many times. And I want to hear with you as young folks how you feel about it.
At the time of Francis Epps, there was an incredibly strong abolitionist movement forming. They were spreading abolitionist literature and actively fighting against the institution of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Francis Epps was an anti-abolitionist, and he helped block this literature from being spread.
Mm-hmm.
He actively pushed against any sort of liberation movements that were happening. And so even if we measure him by the standards of the time in which he lived, he was actively trying to suppress black people from liberating themselves.
But so, can't we recognize the good things that he did? I mean, the positive things that he did. Florida State, St. John's Episcopal Church. I mean, even if he had some negativity about him, what about the positive? So do we just throw the baby out with the bathwater?
I mean, the positive thing that he did was he had enough money to build a school. Wow, congratulations. I mean,
here's the thing.
The
positive thing was how rich he was, mm-hmm. and the narrative that he put
that
to use.
If we want to talk about him as the founder of the university, we have looked at the documents, the minutes of the meetings of the founding of this university, and Francis Epps had a very, very minor role. He sat in on a couple of meetings and didn't really say anything in those meetings. And as you pointed out, no one talked about Francis Epps as the founder of this university until 1995. Okay. The university had been around for over 100 years before people even considered Epps the founder. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, his accomplishments are very little, even if you remove the fact that he was a slave owner.
And the fact that he was even honored as the founder is just mostly a publicity stunt on the part of FSU. Mm-hmm. He was the grandson of Thomas Jefferson, and FSU wanted to represent itself as a prestigious Jeffersonian school with a history, and part of they incorrectly represented history to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. It's what we are trying to do is accurately represent history for what it was, not what FSU wants to make it appear that it was.
So do you think should colleges that had ties to slavery, which was more than 150 years ago, should they take steps to make up for it?
See, the thing is, like, yes, we are advocating for the statue mm-hmm. being taken down, but it's not, again, like Maddie mentioned, like Kat mentioned, it's not because we're trying to take away the history, it's because we want to shed light on it. You know, okay. these founders of these universities, when people talk about them, you know, Thomas Jefferson, they say one of the founders of our country, but they look away from the fact that he, you know, violated one of his slaves, you know, had children with one of his slaves, owned mm-hmm. slaves. They look away from that fact. And we're not saying that these schools...
That's not that important.
See, we're not saying that these schools should just completely, you know, desecrate these figures that mm-hmm. did such great things.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You get the 411 here on 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I have students from FSU. Again, I welcome Catherine Draken, Johns Palmer, Maddie Hendrick, and Isabella Casanova. Isabella, I had to interrupt you.
That's Bricks. Okay.
Did you finish your thoughts, or did you have other things you wanted to share? And that applies to anyone else that had some other comments.
I mean, again, just to reiterate, you know, we're trying to shed light on the history of our school. Mm-hmm. We don't want to erase what happened, because, okay. yes, you can say that slavery was typical of the time, or whatever kind of rhetoric was typical of the time, but you have to consider that, you know, people have minds of their own. They're not slaves to the things going on around them. So simply defending Epps by saying, oh, but slavery was normal at that time, that's not the correct way to do mm-hmm. things. That's like saying that right now, you know, if one of us decided to shoot up FSU, oh, but that's just what's going on at the time.
Exactly.
You know, that's not the way
that's
to do
what's
it.
Happening.
And glorifying these figures that did such terrible things just because they did one good thing, you know, that's like saying, oh, but, you know, Adolf Hitler, you know, did such a great thing for Germany's economy, he also slaughtered millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have to take the person as a whole and not just erase some part right. because you're trying to, you know, boost your own morale or your own, you know, status.
Yeah, the TLDR, or since we're on the radio, the TLDL, too long didn't listen, the fact is, when you have that statue on our campus, and it's just a picture of, or an image of some dude sitting on a park bench in 19th century clothing, there's no context. You don't know the story behind mm-hmm. this person. So when people tell us that we're trying to erase history, it's like, no. We're adding the context that you did not get in high school. We're trying to tell you the real story that no one has ever shown you before.
And to go back to your question, you know, what does the legacy of slavery have to do with universities now? And we, you know, people always ask us, it's just a statue. Why care about a statue? There's so much bigger things to worry about. And we, you know, the way we've always viewed it is that we have looked at, you know, the racism at Florida State contemporarily right now. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that since the late 1990s when affirmative action was taken out. Ironically, one of the people who was the architects of that was John Thrasher, who was Speaker of the House at the time, who's now the president of the university. We've seen declining black enrollment, you know, black enrollment's dropped about
by almost half since 1999.
And, you know, we talk about how...
Well, maybe that's the design of it. I mean, I'm not trying to be facetious, okay? That may be the real plan.
Yeah, and, you know, we actually had a wonderful person come to Florida State about a month ago, Angela Davis. She was this civil rights activist from the 1960s, a member of the Black Panther Party, and she came and spoke, and one of our SDS members asked her her opinions on the statue, and you know, she hadn't heard about the specific statue, but she was explained, and she had a lot of interesting points, and one of the things was, you know, don't forget that the way that the American university system was set up has very racist connotations and was built into the process of slavery from the beginning. The very idea of the American university is tied into slavery and anti-black racism.
And that's really what I meant when I said maybe by design. I mean, people of color were not welcomed in the first place. I mean, they had to fight to get there. Okay, I don't know how much you know about the HBCUs, but, you know, that was their purpose, to educate people of color because they couldn't be educated anyplace else. You know, education was something that they certainly did not want slaves or those enslaved to have. You know, if you could read or write, boy, you got throttled for it, you know? You know, just, yes, they were going to flog you for everything. So, I mean, that, even though, you know, we don't talk about it, you look the other way. That is the reality. And all of those types of conditions and situations influence where we are today. And they still have remnants. We have lots of remnants of that stuff today. So, you know, sometimes people will say, oh, well, you know, Dr. Holyfield said such and such. It's the reality. Mm-hmm. It's the reality that you don't want to hear. Yeah. Okay?
Yeah, and having a statue of somebody, there's this implicit honoring of that person. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's honored as the founder. There is a trophy named after him for donations. The law building is named after him. And
The law building is named after Roberts, the criminology building.
Sorry, the criminology building. I misspoke. and what we should be doing, I think, is holding up people who fought against these institutions like slavery, like segregation, people who fought against the Confederacy. These are the people who we should be honoring because what they did allows people like me to even be able to go to school at FSU.
Well, Catherine, you were reading my mind because my next question was going to be then, what should be the criteria for naming streets and having statues?
Well, I went a few weeks ago to one of the panels that Thrasher held concerning the naming of the statues and of the Roberts Building. And it was really eye-opening to be there because, you know, we've had people who come to our meetings, you know, every week. And when we talk about Epps and when we talk about B.K. Roberts, they say, but this is such a small issue. Like, why would you even consider pursuing this? This is a small battle.
Yeah.
First of all, we need to quote Maddie, we need to pick battles that we know we can win. Because this is clearly something that has been, over the years, moving along. You know, Thrasher himself at the meeting I attended said, this needs to be solved now. You know, and someone, they had like a public comment period, and someone who was an alum of the law school, you know, I don't recall his name right now, but he was, you know, a black student at FSU, and he came and he said, how do you think I felt walking through the halls every single day of my law school where I'm being educated, seeing the name of someone who, if they were still alive, wouldn't want me to be here, you know? And just that thought is enough to make you think, you know, what if I had been living in a different time, he wouldn't have been able to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if any of us really had been living in a different time, we would be having such different experiences right now. And it's not fair that certain people who want to pursue that certain dream are being held back because, You know, there are people in our university who still have that kind of mindset. And we shouldn't honor those people who wanted to purposely remove certain people from this environment.
Yeah. It's like acknowledging the governor who stood in the schoolhouse door for his deeds as governor, even though he was blatantly known for taking up racist action. And while we're talking about the meetings on the panel, I want to talk about where we've been with the panel now.
Okay.
So, as Issa mentioned, President Thrasher attended the most recent panel, stating that this issue needs to be expedited and solved quickly. And he specifically said, "I want Epps and
BK Roberts,
building solved immediately." We've been attending every one of those meetings that we can, and I believe within this week or next week they're starting the public comments.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and right. We're definitely going to be there. We're going to try and give as much information as we can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What I'd like us to do, because we're running out of time, I want to talk about SDS first. I mean, just for those who are listening, you know, tell us where you're at. What's the status of SDS? When you meet, how to contact, if you have anything, you know, forthcoming. Let's talk about that.
So SDS right now, for anyone who's interested in getting involved, our meetings are in Union Room 320, every Thursday at 7 p.m. And right now, our focus is mainly anti-war and fighting against xenophobia, especially considering the recent government shutdown on the topic of DACA and the Dreamers, and that there is this Trump, when he was running for president, he used this rhetoric of building a wall and deporting millions of immigrants. And you see this rise of the alt-right and xenophobic ideology in the United States. And I think it's students' responsibility to fight against that. And that's sort of what we're focusing on this semester.
So, yes, and if you want to get involved, if you can't make it to our meetings, if you want to just see our news and everything else, and including we put our meetings on our Facebook, which is at Tally SDS, T-A-L-L-Y SDS. The name on it is Tallahassee SDS, and we are also, our email is Tally SDS, T-A-L-L-Y SDS @gmail.com, and we have a Twitter at Tally SDS. So Get involved in our social media, shoot us an email.
And it's open to everyone.
It is open to anyone in the Tallahassee community who wants to get involved, especially and primarily Florida State students, and most of our work involves Florida State, but anyone who wants to get involved is welcome.
Okay. Well, you mentioned DACA. I guess in these last few minutes, maybe we can talk a little bit about DACA. You know, it's estimated, 225,000 students in the U.S. are undocumented. Approximately 49% are between the ages of 18 and 24, and they have attended college, and they have attended, you know, the universities. Where do you all sit on DACA?
I think everybody deserves to come to the United States in pursuit of a better life, an education, or to escape. Oftentimes, refugees are escaping American imperialism and the disruptions that Americans have caused in other people's countries. And to start wars and disrupt other countries' economies and then deny refugees of the chaos that we cause is disgusting to me. And what we see today is that the ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is already starting to in mass numbers detain immigrants in these detainment centers, which are similar to prisons. And all of their possessions are being taken away. Families are being torn apart. And it's only seemingly getting worse. In fact, Obama is often called the deporter in chief. And
yeah.
you see how Trump is dealing with these issues today. And we need a strong movement to stand against what is ultimately rooted in xenophobia and American nationalism.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm from South Florida. You know, most of my friends were of Hispanic descent from Central South America. My family is from Central America. And I have so many friends who were, you know, undocumented and who went to school and, you know, were some of my closest friends. And I don't think it's right that, you know, I mean, people who come from Cuba, who come from Venezuela, who come from Colombia, I mean, Cuba's in the state that it is because of American intervention, but we're not going to talk about that.
We'll save that for next time.
You know, we could talk about that forever.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, all these countries that are experiencing all this turmoil, you know, my friends are worried about their families over there, you know, and they want them to get out of that situation. And for our administration to deny these people who have been in this country their entire lives, left these countries when they were 1, 2, 3 years old,
mm-hmm.
who have no idea what their home country, quote unquote, is even like, for them to send them back to an environment completely, you know, alien to them is not right. You know, if you're here in this country and you're pursuing a better life, you're, you know, putting in your work as a citizen, even if you are undocumented, you shouldn't be sent back. That's just unfair.
What? Go right ahead.
And, you know, I'd just like to point out that this, you know, all the people who are trying to push these very strict immigration policies, they say it's about the law or all these things. And, you know, it boils down to two things. It boils down to money and racism. You see that a lot of this, if you track the workforce and the profit margins of all these major companies and stuff, you'll see that it's actually at this point in time, it's beneficial for these companies to lower the amount of people in the workforce. So these heavy immigration policies are a way for them to kind of monitor these things like inflation, these things that mm-hmm. these companies mm-hmm. really want to care about. And, you know, obviously there's definitely a racial aspect of it, the way that people talk about it. It's always, even if they don't mean it, it goes to Hispanic people, to Muslim and Arab people. Mm-hmm. Like, it always affects these sorts of people and not really white people. And this is not exactly DACA, but thinking about immigration and thinking about our situation in Tallahassee and in Florida, I watched the debate last week between Mayor Gillum and Speaker Corcoran. And the way that Speaker Corcoran, and if you don't know what this debate was about, he's trying to pass this legislation that would increase ICE presence mm-hmm. in Florida and basically force government officials to have to comply with ICE and basically reveal these and undocumented immigrants. And the way that he use these scare tactics, talked about these isolated stories where these illegal immigrants, you know, he didn't have to say that they were, you know, Hispanic, but you know that all of the people who were listening knew that that's what he meant. He's describing these, you mm-hmm. know, he ran this very racist
that's
ad.
That's just what I was yeah. going to say. And he has a hood
ran
on.
This racist ad.
It goes back to those code words I was talking about
right.
earlier.
Yeah, he ran this very racist advertisement where this man, you know, brown skin, mm-hmm. wearing a hoodie, mm-hmm. is, like, murdering this, like, white girl. And it's like, oh, so he'd be the last person to say that he's racist. But very, very obviously, this is a racist thing. This is targeting black and brown people from other countries.
And if I may sure. close us out with one last comment. Regarding Trump's comment on, I don't want to use his term, but certain countries which he does not find good for immigrants to come from. I don't want to use his word. My yeah. parents are listening.
But we know.
I find it funny for two reasons. The first is that in saying that he wants people from countries like Norway, mm-hmm. he's, first of all, he's he's inadmittedly admitting that socialism works. So right. I found that funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also,
Norway has universal health care.
Yeah, but he's also admitting that the imperialism that the United States has been doing in those quote countries is really what's making them
so terrible
to live in. Yeah.
Listen. Thank you all for coming. We are out of time, okay? I mean, I do appreciate you coming and sharing it. So that's it for this hour. Many thanks to my audience for their time and their ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.